Hello there, and a warm welcome to the latest edition of the DF Direct Q&A show. Lots to get through this week, particularly in terms of the surprise reveal of Unreal Engine 6. Joining me on the panel, first of all, Will Judd. Hello.
Hello. Happy to be here in this lovely sweltering bedroom.
Yes. Yeah, I was just saying, you know, basically locked myself in a room, incredible heat, turned on the powerful lights, closed the windows. It's going to be a hell of a ride. Hello there, John Linneman.
Hello, Rich. I know the viewers and or listeners can't see it, but your profile pic in Discord, I think, says it all about the heat right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Pretty much. And I'm very pleased to see that you're continuing the tradition of references at the very beginning of the show that will have no...
I must. The idea is
that video users who have no understanding of whatsoever.
It can drive video engagement. There we go.
Oh, okay. That's what it's about. Okay, well, let's just crack on with our first news topic, or rather our first question, but it is a news topic. Basically, it looks like at a Rocket League event, it was revealed that Rocket League is going to be the first game, or rather the first game revealed, to be running on Unreal Engine 6. And we saw some trailer footage there showing considerable graphical upgrades, but that's possibly not really what Unreal Engine 6 is about. Obviously, tons of questions here. We're going to kick off with this one from Alexander Zionov, very, very big apologies if I've got the pronunciation wrong there, which inevitably I probably have. Hello, DF Directors. What's your thoughts regarding the announcement of Unreal Engine 6? In particular, why do you think it was announced so far in advance of a new console release? Marcus asks, hiya, Foundryman, exclamation point, with Rocket League now showing on Unreal Engine 6, what should we take UE6 to mean for traditional games? From Tim Sweeney's comments, it sounds less like a simple nanites slash lumen style rendering leap and more like Unreal becoming a broader platform. UE5, UEFN, Verse, Fortnite style deployment, standalone games and deeper engine architecture converging. The key gaming hook seems to be fixing Unreal's long-standing single-threaded simulation limits. So is UE6 really a next-gen engine, or Unreal's quote-unquote forever platform moment? Better multi-core scaling, easier gameplay programming, larger simulations, and cleaner deployment. Or less elegantly, what the F is Unreal Engine 6 actually supposed to be? Sorry, Rich. Stu Monster, greetings, notable experts of Foundry's Digital. With Unreal Engine 6 teased via the new Rocket League demo, what are you most excited about technically? Do you expect iterations such as major multi-threading improvements to fix UE5 stuttering and CPU bottlenecks, or more innovations such as advances in large-scale simulation networking, nanite slash lumen, or Verse integration? Perhaps something novel, new, and exciting they haven't done before. John, very much a weird way to announce Unreal Engine 6, would you say? What do you think's going on?
I mean, to me, it seems like they're evolving the engine to suit their specific service game needs a little bit more. And just, I guess I don't yet understand why they decided to throw the 6 on there yet. That may occur in time. But it does seem like what we know thus far, and we don't know that much, is that this seems more like a scalability leap, something designed to sort of like solve some of the long-standing issues with the engine while also making integrations with certain like multi-user experiences perhaps easier. Okay. Right. I mean, there's definitely no showcase for new visual features, right, like a lumen or nanite or that kind of stuff. And so my guess is that they want to make something that simply performs better while perhaps living up to the promise of what Unreal Engine 5 was all about, right? Because while they have made progress in certain areas, there's definitely been limitations. Specifically, one of the big things is the multi-threaded simulation, right? Which there's still a lot of single-threaded issues with Unreal Engine 5 games, and that has caused problems in terms of performance. So by fully parallelizing the well engine, thank you, the gameplay simulation, they can make better use of modern style CPUs, which focus obviously on more cores as opposed to faster single cores, which could help with some of the performance issues. Although looking at it, I mean, when I look at what Unreal Engine 5 has achieved, and I was discussing this with somebody recently, Unreal Engine traditionally has been something that focuses on a future that doesn't quite arrive And developers essentially right. have to find ways to make up for it as Epic scrambles to get it more performant on the current consoles, right? Like, Unreal Engine's origins back in the 90s was very PC-centric, but then once we got to the second generation engine, that started to appear more in consoles, and there's definitely a lot of performance limitations at the time. But Unreal Engine 3 is where they really tried to push things out, and that's when they sort of took over the industry. But on consoles especially, the performance was always absurdly poor, I would say. 30 FPS was generally like the target, but even that was not that common. And when you look at first generation software, especially like Gears of War, Mass Effect 1, stuff like that, they run terribly on Xbox 360. Right? Like really, really yeah, bad. Yeah. Like that level of performance would never have been acceptable today. And image quality is not great either. Like they just don't hold up that well. And things did get better. But then again, it happened with Unreal Engine 4, where they were sort of like promising these like big changes to, you know, the lighting pipeline and all kinds of other things. And most of it didn't really bear out. And performance targets were still somewhat limited. All of these engines, by the way, had major issues with stuttering, specifically on PC. That was a problem. And on the console side with Unreal Engine 4, most games, not all, but most, were either 30 FPS target, where they successfully hit that much more reasonably, or sort of like an unlocked experience, with just a few upper-end games or simple games targeting 60. Unreal Engine 5 actually mostly solved this on the console side. Performance is not perfect, but it's way better than any other Unreal Engine in history, right? But the introduction of the technologies such as, you know, Lumen, Nanite, VSMs obviously went too far for what the hardware was capable of. And even though developers were able to mostly reach the 60 FPS promise, they gave up so much in terms of image quality with low internal resolutions and just huge issues with temporal like effects, right? Like the ray gathering and all the other problems that occur. Like it just creates this noisy, smeary look. So even though we got good performance, we gave up image quality. So reading this then, if we take what we know as like some of the big focus here, we could just be looking at a future where they're trying to make Unreal Engine 6 bring all the features that currently exist together, optimize things, and make something that's perhaps, hopefully, more performant on game consoles of the era, while also delivering good image quality this time. Maybe we'll finally get there. I don't know. But that part is interesting. I'll let you guys talk more about the, what is it, like Metaverse Lite connected ecosystem stuff. I have no interest in that stuff. I'm not sure what this is going to mean for the development side, but on the game side, I mean, I get it. That's the types of stuff that Epic makes. And I think that's why something like Rocket League makes sense as an announcement, similar to like a Fortnite, right? They own it. So it's like a playground for new features.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That kind of makes sense. Will, what's your take?
I mean, yeah, it feels like one of those operating system releases where they say, like, yeah, we're just really working on polish. We really want to have a good experience. You know, there's no big standout feature that is going to, you know, move rendering forward in a novel way. But instead, it's more about just trying to get everything that you've already got, you know, running in a way that means that people can actually access it. Because I think the biggest issue so far this generation has been, you know, you've got all these amazing features in Lumen and Nanite. And yet the only games that really kind of perform well and we're really happy with the image quality and the performance are the ones that kind of don't use them or use them in a very limited way. So if there is just a new version of Unreal Engine 5, like 5.9 or whatever, that had all of these features and you could just enable them at 60 FPS and it was just fine and chill because a lot of stuff was done in the background to make, you know, more modern CPUs be used optimally and stuff like that, and that would still be like a huge step forward, right? It would mean a lot of people would actually get to see the UE5 features used to their full effect. So it seems to be more about that. In terms of like metaverse stuff, I also don't really know much about the metaverse. I'm not a Fortnite stan that logs on every week to see what else is possible, but it seems like you'll just be able to say, you know, okay, instead of exporting for Windows or Mac or whatever, you can just export to Fortnite. And that is quite an interesting development option for people, especially who are kind of getting into the industry. And, you know, presumably Unreal Epic really want to be able to capture those sort of first-time developers, right? And if you have a button that just says export to Fortnite and it just does that in a really simple and easy way, then that means that you're getting people who just have one really good game idea, you're getting them into the Unreal ecosystem right away. So I think, you know, it's going to be more about kind of shoring up kind of the meta stuff rather than, you know, kind of pushing the boat out. Or at least that's what we've seen so far, right? Like, I was kind of expecting this announcement to have a ton of detail and be very advanced, but it is mostly, you know, like about a minute of people cheering, like logos appearing on a screen, and then a few bits and pieces of a car. So, you know, maybe there is more coming. Maybe there is a huge novel feature that we just haven't seen yet, but it does kind of feel like it's more about, you know, kind of leveraging this and making sure that it's like actually accessible in a way that UE5 never really panned out to be.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to this. And I think, how can you say it? The whole concept of metaverses hasn't done particularly well. Obviously, Meta's own metaverse isn't on particularly firm footing at the moment. But then you look at something like Roblox, which is doing incredibly well. And then obviously, I think, you know, Epic are eyeing something similar with Unreal. And I think that's part of what this is all about. I was just reading up on this. They've got some sort of social engine framework that they're looking to integrate. I'm just looking at this metaverse and interoperable creator economy. I mean, you know where this is all going, right? And I think this is probably a good direction for Epic itself to be moving in, as long as it doesn't lose focus on the stuff that actually matters for gaming. And I don't think they will. You know, I think moving on to the next generation of consoles, I mean, you can kind of see what's happening with Unreal Engine 5 on PC now, where generally Unreal Engine 5, as long as you're not running on Epic settings, as long as you're using optimized settings, the UE5 experience on PC is actually a lot better in terms of stuff like image quality and performance than it is on the consoles at the moment. So, you know, in a sense, the move to next generation should solve those problems. And I dare say there will be graphical upgrades, right? I dare say that at some point, Unreal Engine 6 will reveal some sort of path-tracing push, for example, which just kind of makes sense, right? But at the same time, I think, you know, looking at Rocket League, it's quite interesting, right? Because the existing game still runs on Unreal Engine 3. So moving to Unreal Engine 6, I think, is quite interesting because it's got to be performant across a massive range of hardware, right? So the optimizations that they're looking to push out to make Unreal Engine 5 more performant just kind of like naturally move into Unreal Engine 6, and they've decided, right, well, we can do this now with Rocket League, hopefully. I haven't got too much more to say about it, really. I do think there probably will be some kind of re-reveal or new feature. I mean, this is just a tease once there is an actual next generation console reveal. John?
I want to ask you, Rich, if you think, I thought about a comparison, right, against all generations of Unreal. Unreal Engine, the original, is like Windows 95, right? It's like an attempt to sort of create this standardized technology. Unreal Engine 2 is like Windows 98, where it takes what the original had and builds on it successfully, and it's pretty good and well-received. Unreal Engine 3 is like Windows 2000, where they made a big shift to a like new kind of architecture and like changed the way they do lighting, but it still wasn't always that well-suited or performant for a lot of tasks. And this is where I think Unreal Engine 4 could be considered Windows XP, which, even though it has issues, it was pretty well liked and did a lot. And, you know, it was a very capable moment for the engine where it kind of became like the engine to use. But then we come to Windows Vista, also known as Unreal Engine 5, where it tried to rewrite everything again and do things in a different way. And it was slow and hated, even though... you know, and a lot of things. And now that gives us hope that Unreal Engine 6 could become Windows 7.
Wow, that's beautiful.
That is beautiful, man.
No, I have not smoked anything before this question and answer session.
I just think, you know, ultimately, if we go back, you know, the whole thing about Unreal Engine 5, image quality and performance, I think Epic were kind of expecting that they could probably roll out a 30 FPS engine for the most part, and it would look great. And it was kind of borne out by the demos and the various quality modes that we've seen. But, you know, basically consumers demanded 60 frames per second. And I still think Epic has been sort of scrambling to deliver that on the engine side. And where they haven't, developers have had to make do, and some have been better equipped to do it than others. But, you know.
You know, I think, Rich, one of the things that, if I recall, Unreal Engine 5's like Lumen system was designed under the idea that consoles wouldn't have a sort of hardware-based ray tracing features or wouldn't be well-suited to it, right? And they kind of built like an alternative kind of side concept with their software-based ray tracing solution. So it feels like they kind of were focusing in the wrong direction early on and had to kind of course correct a bit. And I do wonder if that had some impact on the way things turned out.
Interesting. I do think we should take on board that this is just a tease, though. It's just Unreal Engine 6 is coming. When they're actually going to make a further announcement, I mean, we've got Unreal Fest coming soon, but from what I understand, that's just going to be concentrating more on the optimization side in some respects that's happening with Unreal Engine right now, which we'll talk about shortly. Unreal Engine 6, I'm curious when Rocket League 6 is going to be coming out and the extent to which it can offer, you know, something new and exciting, I guess, over the Unreal Engine 3 original, probably not difficult as to whether it's going to sort of be something that couldn't have been done on Unreal Engine 5, just because we'll have to wait and see.
You're going to have to stop playing Biomutant on the Bio Richie channel and switch over to Rocket League, Rich.
I guess so. let's move on. Okay, sticking with Unreal Engine, perhaps inevitably, Darjarko asks, lads, double exclamation point, what do you think to the new medium lumen setting that has been added to Unreal Engine 5, which will quote-unquote support handhelds that run at 60 on consoles? Is UE5 finally going to be delivered fully featured games on Switch 2 that aren't gutted beyond recognition? Is this the true beginning of the next forever cross-gen period? Okay. When we're talking about Lumen here, medium Lumen, as things stand, you engage that on PC and it basically turns off Lumen, as far as I understand. The features that make Lumen disappear and you go back to a drop-back sort of situation. If you look at Black Myth Wukong did in its performance mode on Xbox, which was later brought to PlayStation, it kind of just sort of ruins the look of the game because it was authored with Lumen in mind, and then they offer up a performance mode that turns it off. So the concept of a medium Lumen that is actually Lumen while offering performance increases and increasing the viability of Lumen on stuff like Switch 2 and other handhelds, obviously this is a good thing, right? Potentially they probably wouldn't need to put too much effort into the fallback solution at that point if it runs well on Switch 2, right?
Yeah, this definitely just seems like a way to make the cheaper version of the implementation actually look okay, because previously going for that sort of lower setting, as you noted, essentially disabled all the benefits of Lumen, right? And it really ruins the visuals. It also would have made it difficult for the art team to have to target these different like visual stylings, right? Because it does drastically alter the look of the game because it basically is missing most of the actual GI bounce. So I guess the question is how is this going to look in motion? Like what are the actual like downsides to it? Right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we need to see, I guess. But it makes sense to focus in on supporting platforms like the Switch 2, because thus far, has there been much? I mean, there was the
I think Layers of Fear 2.
Yeah, that used it. It's a very slow paced, quiet game, of course.
Yeah.
But most Unreal games have had to cut that. So, this seems like this will be a good thing for Switch, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Basically, as I understand it, just looking up here, medium Lumen is basically a lighter weight version of Lumen using irradiance fields and probe occlusion, reduced trace resolution, Capped light bounces, proximity prioritization. I'm just reading here. The engine dynamically prioritizes calculating lighting for objects closer to the player, aggressively culling or simplifying calculations for distant geometry. The engine heavily downscales the resolution at which lighting traces are calculated. Capped light bounces strictly limits the number of indirect light bounces allowed in a scene. Yeah, just kind of makes sense, right? I guess, as John says, though, Will, proof of the pudding is basically in the tasting, or rather, whether it's going to look decent or not. You'd kind of hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the Switch 2 is fundamentally a much more powerful device than the Switch 1. So, you know, we kind of need to recalibrate our expectations for the platform. And, you know, the fact it has a modern CPU, it has DLSS, it means that it's already in a decent place. You know, if developers want to go after these more advanced effects. So this seems like it'll be another useful toolkit, part of the toolkit, but, you know, we kind of need to see it in person to see if the trade-offs that it's making are actually reasonable and worthwhile, or whether they kind of sacrifice too much. Like, it sounds very promising, but we'll have to see it in a shipping game and to really judge it.
Yeah, because fundamentally, yeah. Will, like, the issue I think most people have with Unreal Engine graphics these days is just the fizzling and noise that you get when using Lumen at low resolutions that we often see in consoles, right? They Definitely. Really need to ensure that that is solved or improved going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's basically, I really want to take a look at to look at this new medium Lumen to see what the trades are, because there's no such thing as a free lunch in rendering. But at the same time, we kind of need that scalability with Lumen, because the future is all about running as many games as possible on as many different systems as possible. And the gulf now in hardware performance between something like a Steam Deck and a 5090 is like astonishingly high, but we still need to be able to run the same games on this level of hardware, on this range of hardware. So, looking forward to seeing how that all turns out in actual shipping games. Next question. This one comes from Jose, and he says, "Hello, gents, exclamation point. What Unreal Engine 5 game got closest to the Matrix demo?" he hasn't actually posed this as a question. There's no question mark there. It's an exclamation point.
True.
Which pretty much sums it up. Will, I'm tempted to say none.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the default answer, isn't it? Like, nothing really has come close to that demo in terms of just sheer wow factor of like, oh, wow, this is actually all running in real time. And, you know, look at all these systems working in harmony and so on. I would put forward Stalker 2 as a game which is open world, Nanite, Lumen. It's using, you know, most of the Cortex. It's reasonably performant. It works on consoles. On PC, it's incredible. I really enjoyed playing through that game and seeing how everything worked. That felt like a real kind of next-gen moment for me. But yeah, that demo is just was so good that it's kind of hard for any shipping game to be like, oh yeah, we can just equal that and layer on an actual working game on it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John, it's a bit unfair to say that no game has got close to it, because I don't think any game has tried to. They've all basically got their own targets, right?
Yeah, they kind of have their own visual targets, so it's not that comparable. Actually, the closest thing I would say in terms of like quality, even if the character models aren't quite there, is Cyberpunk 2077 with fast tracing, but that's not Unreal. So but in all seriousness, the one that I would put out there, and again, artistically, it's completely different, it's Hellblade 2. I think Hellblade 2 is probably the best like visual example we've seen, just in terms of like utilizing the engine to create like near photorealistic visuals at times, like just what they did with the characters, the environments, lighting. It's a great use of the engine. Absolutely stunning game. I might also put, when it's running on a powerful PC, I do think Black Myth Wukong is quite impressive to behold, right? But that's one where I think none of the console versions really hold a candle to what, you know, that Matrix demo, and certainly the PC version. They made too many weird sacrifices that don't really hold up. But Hellblade is probably the one I got to go with here, even though, I mean, I guess part of that comes down to the fact that it is a very, very, very limited game in terms of scope. It is like an evolution of this kind of like, almost, it's like a modern FMV game. Oh, and one other I would say that gets there in one area specifically is RoboCop Rogue City. Like character model wise, it's not even close. It's awful in that regard. And I think that's just a matter of budget. But the actual scenes, the sets that they built, the lighting in those sets, I think is absolutely like amazing and is actually not far off from what the Matrix demo does. So if you just look at the environments, I think RoboCop actually does a pretty darn good job there.
I think one thing we need to bear in mind also is that the Matrix Awakens demo was actually quite a poor performer. Frame rates weren't particularly great. Cutscenes were capped to 24 frames per second with letterboxing. It was all intended to produce this cinematic look, but as a sort of example of a viable game, I don't think it really is one. Something worth bearing in mind there. It was kind of like just a sort of vision piece, really, as opposed to a game. And yeah, it's interesting that you point out stuff like Hellblade 2, John, which now runs at 60 frames per second on the base consoles and is looking pretty awesome. So yeah, I think if you're talking about sort of technological achievement with Unreal Engine 5, it's different ways of looking at it, right? Okay, let's move on. I've got a question here from Molson. Hello, DF, exclamation point. With recent retrospectives on the 1080 Ti, I couldn't help but think of another card that might join the quote-unquote fine wine collection in due time, the RTX 4090. Hear me out. If I told you that its eye-watering $1,600 price tag at launch, assuming you could get one at MSRP, was good value, you would have called me crazy. But what if I told you that going on 4 years later, it would still be the second most powerful gaming GPU in existence and likely to remain that way for up to 5 total years as new GPU releases see further delays. I kind of see where he's coming from on this one, Will, because the 4090 is still a beast. I guess it is still the second most powerful GPU money could buy because, you know, it kind of sits in that position between the 5080 and the 5090. Fine wine, though, is that pushing it?
Yeah, I guess maybe we need to wait for a few more years after the next generation of cards come out to really see if it deserves the name. But I mean, yeah, it's a kind of unprecedented for the 4090 to still be pulling ahead of the 5080 in so many games. Like I'm still using that as my primary GPU. I had to, send it off to be repaired by a specialist service in Germany after it had the 12 volt high power issue. And that wasn't cheap, but
Whoa.
it's still really, really holding up. I think you said in the initial review that it kind of solves rasterized rendering. Like you just,
Yeah.
any game, you just boot it up and you know it's going to be fine, which is just such a cool experience. And yeah, it was ridiculously expensive. And if you got like one of the third party cards where, it was maybe £500 or even more above the RRP, then, that's not great. But if you got one of those Founders Editions ones that was actually available at RRP for a while and kept coming into stock, then I think you're doing pretty well. Like it's really held up. And, I think it's going to be interesting to see if we get like a 60 series, like where does the 4090 fall into that? Like, is it
Right.
still going to be like the third best card? Because that wouldn't be too bad, actually.
Yeah, there's this weird thing where basically I think Nvidia pushed hard on making massive GPU dies, right? So they did it for the 4090, they did it for the 5090, remarkably on the same process node. But AMD didn't follow suit. They didn't produce their own massive GPU, which basically means that with only one player in town, I guess Nvidia could feel comfortable in producing a 5080 that wasn't as fast as a 4090 and was basically an iterative step over the 4080 with dynamic frame gen added, essentially. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Fine wine, you kind of need to wait a few more years, I think, before we actually make that determination. But I think, when you're talking about, I don't know about that, because we were talking about the 2080 Ti as fine wine, but it was, again, that was massively expensive at launch as well, judged by the price points of the time. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think going into the 60 series, though, I wouldn't be surprised if Nvidia is leaning more into the machine learning side of it. I think they kind of have to be in a situation where the more mainstream cards are able to do the higher end ML stuff they want to do. So I'm wondering how that works out on an economics perspective, whether they actually cut back on rasterization. Interesting. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen there. Mm. One thing I did note, though, Will, because there is this sort of lack of a high-end die from AMD, when I was doing all of the reviews for RDNA 4 and for Blackwell, it just seemed remarkable how many GPUs seemed to be delivering performance that was sort of like an RTX 5090, give or take. That seemed to be where we actually sort of topped out on those kind of mid to higher end cards, and which in turn is kind of like not that much faster than RTX 3080 even. So there has been that kind of like sort of like an invisible barrier almost, unless you're going to go big. John, 4090, fine wine.
I think
thoughts.
I think in another 5 years, we may be looking back at this and saying, remember when they sold us GPUs and we could buy them for money rather than renting space in a data server that's been placed in our front yards that we don't actually own? And also the future where instead of playing video games ourselves, we just have an AI agent do it for us. Yes, those are the days, you know.
Man. The thing is, there are crazy people out there that actually want that for some reason. It's like, you know, those stories of Elon Musk hiring somebody to play Path of Exile for him. It's just like, what's the point?
I know. I'm really worried about the future of this stuff, because it really feels there is this feeling that the PC market is in big trouble and companies are realizing that, wait, like, this is peanuts compared to we could be investing in more AI and data centers. And giving everybody what they clearly want. And gaming's being deprioritized. I hope that's not the case, but like NVIDIA's at a weird point, right? Where like they're the only one doing high-end gaming GPUs right now. They own most of the market share, but they've also shifted almost everything over to this like AI and data center business, right? I don't know where things will go, and I just worry about it. This like the future of everything around this hobby, just because of these madmen at the top that are just obsessed with more AI stuff. Like, and I don't know. Like, what do you think? Do you think something's gonna break here, and it's gonna just like they'll realize that they were wrong?
No, I think that as long as there is a market for gaming, there will be people making devices for gaming. I think that's the sort of bottom line.
I hope so.
There's still a huge amount of money in it. The question is the makeup of those devices and whether it's kind of like deprioritized, where I'd say there is, you know, there's genuine concern there. I still think, you know, the PC market is huge. NVIDIA sold millions upon millions of Blackwell cards. I was looking at Steam Hardware Survey a while back. I was looking at that, and I was surprised to see that the RTX 5070 was the number one Blackwell card on the Steam Hardware Survey, and it was something like 4% of the marketplace. 4% of the Steam user base is a gigantic amount of GPUs that have been sold, and that's just one card. So I think, you know, it's not really a question of, you know, are we going to see graphics cards deprioritized? I think that's probably likely to happen. We aren't going to be getting new GPUs this year, new architectures for sure, maybe next year. But I still think the market is big enough to actually make it happen. I think that's the bottom line. And if they don't, well, I guess it's going to be happy days for AMD, right? Or somebody else that will step in to do it. That's just the nature of the market.
Chinese graphics cards, baby. I do think
the gold rush has got to come to an end at some point, though, I'm pretty sure.
I hope so.
Yeah, man, it's crazy stuff, though. Let's move on. Quite a question here from Dots Finest 82. Hello, gents, exclamation point. Something that keeps getting neglected when discussing Sony pulling their PC sports is the waning quality of each subsequent release. After a rocky launch of Horizon Zero Dawn in 2020, it seems like Sony got things together with great ports of Spider-Man and Miles Morales, as well as as well as God of War and Days Gone. But each port thereafter, Last of Us Part 1 and 2, Returnal, and the biggest sinner, Spider-Man 2, have diminished greatly in quality. If part of Sony's reasoning for putting back these ports is slowing sales, they're throwing stones in a glass house, exclamation point. To this day, Spider-Man 2 stutters like crazy on all but the beefiest setups, with no updates since May 2025. Well, it's been quite interesting from my perspective that the reaction from PC gamers to Sony basically pulling out has kind of like been almost like a shrugging of the shoulders. Maybe this is one of the reasons. And maybe another reason is that the amount of first party single player narrative driven games has kind of like diminished quite drastically, to the point where it's like, well, if I'm only missing a couple of games a year, what's the big deal?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, yeah, like most of the games that are on that list, like The Last of Us Part 1 and 2 and Returnal, they're not terrible ports. Like, we've seen much worse ports than these.
Well, I'd say at first
Spider-Man
it was.
2. Yeah.
Last of Us Part 1 wasn't great, but yeah, they put in the time.
Exactly.
Part 2 was okay, but, you know, Alex got quite a lot of flack for pointing out, hey, this was running on a base PlayStation 4, and it's running on this PC, and it kind of should be running better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we recently covered this on the website, and as part of that, we had a poll where we kind of looked at what people's sentiment was about, you know, the news. Like, do you agree with Sony pulling back from PC in this way? And I think we had 29% were outraged of some description, 32% didn't like it, but they kind of understood the reasons for it. 19% were in favor of Sony withdrawing, and 21% didn't care. So it's clear it's quite a split, you know, reaction, I guess, based on whether or not you were one of those people that was kind of lining up to buy these day one on PC. And yeah, I mean, obviously narrative single player stuff isn't in the renaissance that it has been, you know, a few years ago, perhaps, but it's still like a massive publisher, which was doing relatively good work. And especially all the Nixus ports were really, you know, technologically really stellar. So it's a huge loss for PC in that way. And, you know, it's strategically, I totally get it. You know, Project Helix is coming out and you don't want to be making sure that your PlayStation games run really well on that. And there are lots of other reasons as well. But yeah, it's obviously, a mixed bag.
What do you make of this, John?
I don't think that the slowing sales determined why they stepped away from PC or want to step away from it. I really think it's more to do with what we discussed last time regarding the market changing and shifting more towards a model where the latest Xbox hardware could conceivably just play their games, right? I don't think they want that. But it is odd though that things kind of ended the way they did. And yeah, Spider-Man 2 situation, that's pretty disappointing. From my perspective, given that the console version was so optimized, it ran really well on PlayStation 5. And so you would hope that the PC version would receive the kind of care it deserves. But alas, I actually haven't revisited it lately, but hearing that it hasn't been updated since May of last year, yikes.
I mean, it kind of sounds like they probably made that decision internally, probably around that time. And it's only now that we're kind of hearing about it and it's being kind of publicly, or at least, you know, in Sony-wide meetings being
sure,
discussed,
but
right?
If you're selling a product, you should at least support the product, right? And it just feels like it's been abandoned, which
yeah,
kind of
totally.
Sucks. And it's especially weird because it's Marvel's Spider-Man, right? It's not just a Sony property here, so you don't really want... I mean, I can't imagine Marvel would love having a non-optimal version of something out there. But then again, you look at some of the older stuff that had the Marvel name and maybe it doesn't matter. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's a shame. The PC legacy of Sony will be an interesting one to look back on and think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting, I think, is the right word. I'm not really sure what I can really say about this further, except that Spider-Man 2, I remember when it first came out, you know, we did a segment on it in DF2X to provide a kind of snapshot of how it was running, and how it was running was not particularly good. Mm. The aim was that, you know, a couple of weeks later, we were expecting the key issues to be resolved, and then we could probably do a full review, you know, say, okay, you know, we've gone past the issues of the launch. Here's Spider-Man 2. And, you know, optimistically, we would have said, hey, this is a really good port. But, you know, it never felt as though those optimizations came, those improvements came. It always felt sort of a bit strange and weird. Not great. Not great at all. And I think Alex sort of put together like a list of Nixis issues that he had, particularly in terms of like VRAM management, that he was hoping to see improved over time. And I don't think those improvements ever came. We did get a pretty good port of Death Stranding 2, but again, there are issues with that one at launch, which did ultimately see improvements. The extent of that, though, I'm wondering whether, you know, there is much more of oversight, if you like, from Kojima Productions.
Probably.
Do care very, very much about the quality of the games. And even after we put our review out, which was quite late, where we thought a lot of the issues were resolved, updates still kept coming to address further consumer feedback. I do think that is probably it at this point. It's probably the last we're going to see of Sony stuff, and I think that's a bit of a shame. But I kind of see where the posters, the question asker is coming from this, because, yeah, initially, you know, things, there were issues with Spider-Man at launch, but they did tend to be mitigated, improved, and it turned into a pretty decent port. I had a great time playing it on Steam Deck, for example. You know, that's pretty awesome. And there were games that out of the gate actually seemed to be pretty good. You know, Ghosts of Tsushima, rather. Ghost of Yote's never coming to PC at this point.
Yeah.
The quality did reduce. And to the point where Returnal, actually looking at that, is, you know, I've never actually managed to get a decent experience on a handheld because the stuttering was so bad. Less of an issue on desktop, but handheld, not that good. Great.
I'm just disappointed we never get Gran Turismo 7, because I love GT7, gorgeous on console already, but
yeah.
The PC could have supported ultra-wide resolutions, even further visual refinements, better support for like a wider range of steering wheels and like other custom configurations. Like, it really could have been something special. But alas.
And GT7 was actually the game that disproved, that finally brought down Jensen's prophecy.
That's right.
The great leak that was saying all of these Sony games were coming to PC.
I bet it was planned at some point, though. That's my guess, is that they were working on GT7 and then somebody made the call to not bring it over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, let's move on to our final question. This one comes from Lexington87. Hi there, Crimson Gods! I don't understand that reference.
Crimson Desert?
Anyway.
Something, maybe?
Possibly. I don't know. As a society, we're generally against monopolies, right? Competition is key for a well-functioning consumer market. I'm pretty sure we all agreed on that. So why do we all, me included, love Steam so much? Why do we want to marry Gabe? I'm not sure I'd go that far. Why do we want to marry Gabe and have feelings for Valve, the corporation? Valve is a PC gaming monopoly. If you're on Steam, you're in trouble. Not only that, we all want them to be more of a monopoly. No other publisher apps on my PC, please. Will, he's got a point. Right. I think it's basically the situation is that Valve have actually done a great job of delivering a great service.
Yeah.
I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah,
totally. They're kind of like the closest we're going to get to a benevolent dictatorship.
Yeah, we're all living in fear for the day when Gabe decides to step down. But hopefully he's done enough to ensure continuity. That's the main thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, ultimately we put up with it because it's just so much better than any alternative. It was kind of the first, you know, to really tackle digital releases on PC, and it was rough going early on, but they turned the ship around really fast, and, you know, they've just made a product that people actually like. Like, if you go on, you know, the Epic Games Store, you get so many free games. It's incredible. But also, people don't hang out there. Like, there's no community aspect to it. Like, nobody cares if you have achievements there. Like, Steam have just, you know, Valve have just made Steam like an actual place, a community, has all the features you want. And it also just doesn't break in weird and interesting ways, which has been my experience with pretty much every other launcher or digital storefront. Like, you know, I keep banging on about this, but I'm hoping eventually one day it'll change. Like, the Xbox app is made by the people who make Windows. Like, why can't those two things like work properly together? You would think that would be the easiest thing in the world, is that you have like vertical integration and everything is amazing because, you know, you can line up what different teams are doing to work together better. But yeah, at the end of the day, Steam is just amazing. And therefore, people are willing to put up with, you know, this monopoly that we probably wouldn't do otherwise. Another small thing is that, you know, Valve as a company seems approachable. Like, you can email Gabe and get a response. You know, if you reach out to their PR people, like, they have real answers to your questions. Like, they have a lot of, I don't know, a lot of humanity about them. They're not faceless and corporate. So I think that makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. John?
Yeah, so I think I agree with what you've been saying there, Will. And even as somebody, I was initially against Steam. I didn't like the concept and I didn't want things to go down this digital rabbit hole. But in the end, they've proven themselves as the most capable service. But I think a lot of this has to do, if I may, I feel like it may be connected to the fact that Valve remains a private company as opposed to a company traded on the stock market. Because as we know, you know, these publicly traded companies, they're driven by investors to continuously increase the line. Line must go up. You must always be exceeding what you've done in the past. And this constant growth, this striving for infinite growth, is a cancer on so many companies. And these investors don't actually care about the future of the company because they'll just trade it away when it's trash, right? They will leave wanton destruction in their wake on the way towards a profit. And that has not been good for many companies within the industry. And by Valve remaining private, it has allowed them to likely make decisions that kind of benefit both the company and the user base, right? Like, they have canceled projects that were deep in development before. You know, they've thrown away good work when it's not working for them and basically picking and choosing what they do in a very different way than a lot of publicly traded companies might, which I think is kind of interesting. And it actually does kind of play out in terms of what they do release, right? It also gives them like a ton of flexibility on like timings and such. Like, I think if they had these plans for the Steam machine being blown up by RAM increases, it may have gone differently versus, you know, if it was a public company versus a private company in terms of how they choose to re-reveal it, what the price is going to be, you know, how they're going to handle all this logistics. They can just be very agile with it. So I think that has paid off. And of course, like you said, Will, they do feel slightly more accessible. That's not to say there aren't issues with certain aspects of Steam and all that, but the overall experience, I think, is largely pretty good. Like, if you're going to do a digital storefront, that's the way to do it. And my library on Steam goes back to 2003 when they first launched it, you know? So, and it's still there. It's easy to trust that they will keep things running. We've already lost many other digital storefronts over the years that have just closed up shop and everything's gone, right? If not for piracy, we would have been in trouble. And like you say, you know, even platform holders haven't been able to get this right on the PC. Microsoft has they've done so many things since Steam opened up, starting with like Games for Windows Live stuff and then moving into the modern era now, and they just can't seem to get it right. There's always issues with it that are deeply frustrating for the user, which just shouldn't be the case. And all those other launchers, I think the reason it annoys people is, one, the launchers usually aren't as good as Steam, but two, they're just for that publisher's specific games, which means your library is usually inherently limited on that platform. Or if there are other companies in there, it's also a much more limited selection. The only one I think that maybe has gotten some traction as like a seller of digital games is Good Old Games, because they do specifically specialize in a subset of game releases that nobody else is really doing. And their whole like non-DRM focus, I think, has been positive as well. So, definitely. I mean, their launcher situation's not on Steam's level, but still, I think they're generally well liked and they're a good reseller of digital products. But the rest, man, I mean, Epic Game Store, like, they just, it doesn't feel like it's really evolved at all over the last few years. You know what I mean? Like, you still get in there, it's still missing a lot of base features that you would want. It's just not that great to use. And everything else, I mean, a lot of companies have kind of come crawling back to Steam, haven't they?
Right, yeah.
So
yeah, pretty much, including Microsoft, of course, EA.
But it is kind of just like, I guess, you know, Windows is the most widely used operating system despite its faults. It's not actually a monopoly, but it feels that way to a degree. You know, Mac OS is out there, but the install base is limited by Apple hardware specifically. And then Linux is gaining traction, but it still doesn't have the wide mass market appeal yet, right? So Valve is basically just like the Windows of the gaming UI space in a sense, except they're a lot better than that, but you know.
I think another thing to bear in mind is that with Microsoft, you know, this is like a gigantic company with strata, right? You know, there's like, the bigger the company, the more difficult it is to manage. And I think the more difficult it is to get things done. Whereas Valve has managed to retain the fact that it's a small company with a limited amount of resources, but still get stuff done. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think you're right. There's also that sort of mentality that it is a private company, that it is somehow, you know, on the side of the gamers or whatever, delivering. I think that's the key point, they're delivering. And you're right, the launcher itself is just kind of like, it's kind of like become the standard almost. Nobody has actually managed to come up with something that's quantifiably better, certainly not Epic. I launch a game and I never seem to get any sort of immediate feedback that the game's launching or not, which is
exactly
a crazy thing. And then you look at the Xbox Game Store, which, you know, there have been sort of improvements there, but you know, the how can a launcher be slow? I don't get it. You know, on a 14900K or a 9800X3D, why are we waiting? I think is the bottom line. It's a lot of crazy stuff that's happening there. How difficult is it to run a game? And, you know, I guess there's the other thing, of course, where the legacy, you know, Steam were there first, practically, right? Mm-hmm. So when you start to build up a library that can run into the hundreds or even thousands of games, why would you want to have another launcher to have another bunch of games? You kind of the collecting mentality is that everything is sort of easily accessible with the same same launcher, right? That's kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah, I'm not sure I want to marry Gabe though.
No.
I don't particularly have feelings for Valve, the corporation.
No,
they're a corporation ultimately, but they're doing a lot of things right. And, you know, the fact that they're actually launching their own hardware, the fact that they went there with Steam Deck, I think is quite remarkable. They're doing good stuff. Okay, that was the final question. Therefore, the end of the show. So please do like, subscribe, share if you enjoyed it. Ring bells for whatever. And DF Supporter Program, patreon.com/digitalfoundry. Check us out there. Early access to DF Direct Weekly, early access to videos, high quality video downloads of everything we do, ad free video downloads, I should add, ad free website. Lots going on there. Please support the team. But that's all from us on this one. And I guess we'll see you in the next DF Direct.